Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. I want to start by just saying that we do this every year, this program dedicated to the homeless and to ending homelessness, and to the idea, and maybe some of you won't agree with this idea, and you're welcome to call and talk about it. It won't be the focus of the conversation, but I have to say it anyway, that the question is whether not owning a home, but being in a home, having a roof over your head, is a right. Should be a right. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, before he died, came up with the second Bill of Rights for the United States of America that he was going to push in his last term, he said, in office. Since we ended World War II, he wanted to have different rights be ensconced, be made law in America. One of those rights that he talked about was the right for every American to have a roof over their head, to have a home. Doesn't mean you own the home. You could be renting the home, but a home and a roof over your head. So that's something I take very seriously, and I do believe in it. And Jeff Singer, who is a friend and president and CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless of Maryland, has been doing an incredible job here in our community for many, many years with a new facility. I don't know how he does it. Most people can't figure out how he does it, but it's created one of the best facilities in America for the homeless and for people who are addicted, for people who are going through issues where they've lost homes and money. And we'll talk a bit about that. He's with us in studio. Bob Jankowiak is with us in studio, and Bob has lost his home and job after a battle with health issues. He was a man who will tell his own story in a minute, but who made a really decent living, had a really good job and a home and his own truck, got sick, and by the time he got out of the hospital, he lost it all. And after a period of living on the streets, he found help through Healthcare for the Homeless, and he's still an advocate, and we'll talk with him about that. Archer Curry joins us. She's currently a resident at the Guilford Avenue Shelter, which is the Healthcare for the Homeless home, which is an amazing place. And she joins us with her story and about and her thoughts and ideas, too. And I want to welcome both Bob and Archer to this program. Good to have you here in the studio. We're also joined by Kate Burdell. Kate Burdell is director of the Homeless Services Program for the Mayor's Office of Human Services. And, Kate, good to meet you. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888 or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Jeff Singer.
Mark, thank you so much for doing this again.
Good to have you here, as always. Let's talk about this. I mean, in February you moved into this new facility.
We did, yes.
Let's talk a bit about that. I mean, you were just saying that you're about to open or have opened already a dental clinic for people in this community?
The first dental clinic in the state of Maryland for people experiencing homelessness, children and adults. And, of course, we believe just as housing is a human right that health care is as well.
Yeah, amen to that.
We don't charge people for our services because the people we work with are very poor. We raise a lot of money, $13 million next year. And folks who have not had access to dental care their entire lives will now be able to get not their teeth pulled but fillings and crowns and the same kind of dental care that we hope everyone has access to.
But dental care is one of those things that you have – health insurance hardly covers people's health insurance. Regular people who have regular health insurance through their businesses have a hard time getting dental care.
That's right, and that's why we try to do it better. Healthcare for the Homeless really wants to be a model for the way healthcare ought to be delivered to everyone.
Now, I mean, the idea of homelessness in our society, you know, we overlook it a lot, and we walk past people who are homeless all the time as if they are not there. And it's a much bigger problem than we let on. I know the official statistic is maybe 1% of the population of America experiences homelessness, though my guess is it's a great deal larger than that, and that a lot of people are homeless for a period of time or have to double, triple, quadruple up in somebody's home just to survive. That is, to me, homelessness as well.
We agree. And, in fact, the federal government just changed the definition of homelessness to include a lot of folks who hadn't previously been counted, even though we all knew that they were living in very tenuous situations. There's a 1994 study from Columbia University showed 7% of the population has experienced homelessness. So it's all a matter of how you count.
And it has to be that high, at least, given the economic situation in America, when you have 17% of Americans either unemployed, underemployed, or given up looking for a job. That's a huge number of people. That's almost 20% of the United States population, and those are adults we're talking about, who are unemployed, who are underemployed.
And given the foreclosure, not only of homes that people owned, because that's an enormous problem, a million a year, but of apartments that people owned, and the people who live in the apartments were then evicted, and there's more and more of that that we're seeing. It's very clear that we're seeing a new wave, and we've seen it in the past, but not for, you know, 15 or 20 years maybe, a new wave of people who were like Bob, had good jobs, owned their own homes, and now because of the economy and the cost of health care and other personal tragedies are out on the street.
Well, I think let me introduce Bob and Audrey to our audience again. Bob Jankowiak and Audrey Curry. Bob, I read a piece of your story before I came in. They sent a little bio over him. And right. Talk a bit about your world and who you are to our listeners.
Okay. In 05, you know, all this began in my life. I had led pretty much a normal life. I was an operations manager for a lumberyard and had a good job, had owned my own home, you know, had a brand new truck in the driveway, and, you know, just everything was going well. Then all of a sudden, I was beginning to lose the ability to use my legs, and, you know, I could no longer work. Shortly thereafter, I had been involved in an accident, and when the surgery was done, I contracted MRSA.
Which is it's an infectious disease you get in hospitals.
Exactly. And, you know, so for the next 7.5 months, I went through treatments to try to cure the MRSA. You know, several times during that period, you know, it almost took my life. So after I had a bout with medical assistance, I ended up out on the street. The nursing home had kicked me out. Involuntarily discharged was a term they used. But, you know, so here I am out on the street and didn't really know where to go or what to do. After, I guess, a few weeks, somebody finally told me about health care for the homeless. At that time, you know, I went in there and, you know, went through, you know, admission, you know, getting admitted and going all that. Well, my physical condition by this time was so bad that they put me into the convalescent care unit they had over at American Rescue Workers. So, you know, that gave, you know, me the opportunity to try to get back together. Well, during this, you know, period of time, you know, it found out that I had prostate cancer and colon cancer, and, you know, so multiple surgeries to take care of those issues. And fortunately, you know, with the help of many good people, I was able to survive that. And, you know, since then, 2 knees, 2 hips, and, you know, I'm like the $6 million man.
Don't try to take an airplane. So, I'm going to come back. So I want to hear from Audrey Curry. Audrey, welcome. Good to have you in the studio with us. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Oh. Let me get the mic a little bit closer to you. Tell us a bit about your life and how you ended up homeless.
Well, in 2008, we had a house fire. It was 12 of us living in the house for economic reasons. And I've been in and out of the shelter since 2008. This cold blue, it's a place to be. You know, you're out of the streets, it's safe. So it's good to have somewhere to go instead of staying out in the streets. But it can get rough in there, too.
So 12 people live in this home?
Yes.
How'd that happen? How did 12 people end up living at home together, in a home together?
Well, it was my son, my daughter, my sister. Because of economic reasons, we all pitched in and paid the rent, gas, electric, phone, stuff. We couldn't do it. One person couldn't do it by herself. So all of us just lived together in one house. And it started out as a grease fire. Then the curtains caught on fire. Then my daughter put some water on it so it spread it. Mm. So the firemen really did more damage than the actual fire did. But the house ended up condemned, so everyone had to leave.
And where did you go when it left? When you left that home, where did you end up?
Well, they put us up in a hotel for a couple of months. And then they found my son and my daughter and my sister's housing because they had, like, income. But I didn't have an income, so I was forced to go live in a shelter.
That's the first time that has happened to you in your life, that you had to live in a shelter?
Yes.
That must have been...
It was pretty traumatic, yes.
And so both of you, this is important, I think, because, you know, you've had lots of people in this program who have gone and been homeless and have come out the other side and been through health care for the homeless and other places. And we have this kind of overarching opinion of people who are homeless that they are all alcoholics, they are all drug addicted. And some people are, and they fight through those addictions and they come to the other side and become different human beings. But I think it's important to kind of people realize how many people who find themselves in a situation that you find yourselves in were hardworking people, had a home, were not addicted to anything, and then ended up in the streets.
That's such an important point, Mark. It's homelessness, we say, is poverty without a bed, or lately poverty without a key. If you don't have a key to your own place to live, then you're going to end up in the streets. And yes, there are folks with addictions and mental illness and physical health problems as well. But the reason fundamentally that people are homeless is because they're poor and they can't afford a place to live.
I mean, that seems, you know, in all these kind of times when people talk about homelessness in America, homelessness in our community here in Baltimore, homelessness in Baltimore County or Harford County or whatever place it is, because every county in the state faces the issue on one level or another. I mean, I was up in Harford County a few years ago when we were doing these stories on homelessness in the rural areas, and there were people living in woods and camps, living in cars on sides of roads, people just trying to survive and get through in suburban America. I'm curious, when you hear all this talk all the time about homelessness in our society, I'm curious about two things, and then I haven't heard a word from you yet. Kate, we want to get you in here to talk a bit about what the city's doing about this. But how have your perceptions about the notion of homelessness changed because of your own lives? Bob.
Okay, I was absolutely astounded when it happened to me. You know, I had, you know, like I said, I had a decent job. I had a retirement plan all laid out. And, you know, with, you know, the onset of the medical bills, you know, everything that I had was gone. You know, all the money that I had saved up and, you know, the retirement policies, you know, were eaten up just like that.
Because of your health care bills.
Because of the health care bills, yeah. I was, you know, part of the time I was on there, I had was on vancomycin, which is $600 a bag, and I was getting 3 bags a day. And after several months of that, the bill was just more than what I could have ever.
You had no insurance when this was going on.
No, after when I left work, my COBRA expired, and you know, at that time, you know, I had no insurance at all. So, and it just, you know, you don't think it can happen to you. But, you know, just, you know, one little twist of fate and, you know, you can go from having a really nice life to a really bad life.
Audrey?
Yes, that's true. You know, people think that all homeless people are alcoholics, drug addicts, or mentally ill. But it's people that, just like me, that just stuff just happened. You know, stuff just happened. So, you know, it's people in that shelter that come from all walks of life, all different races, all sizes, shapes, and colors, you know, from all different backgrounds and stuff. So, you know, not all people are there because of alcohol, drugs, and stuff. It's regular people in there, too, that's just down on their luck.
I mean, this is I'm curious how, you know, I've sat in on this mayor's commission on homelessness and read the reports that have come out and different people's committees, and I was in your committee briefly in the beginning of this thing. We looked at hospitals and the cost of all this. So my question, what does the city do? How do you put your hands around this? How do you, you know, when you have all these houses in our town, again, I've been saying this like for 18 years now on the air, all these houses in Baltimore, tens of thousands of houses that are empty that people could be living in. I mean, how do we put our hands around this issue?
Well, this is a huge issue, as you said.
Pradell.
Government can't do it alone. You know, we all are in this together, and we need everyone to help. It used to be, back in the day, I guess, people look after each other. And now it seems lately that everyone's attitude is, oh, the government will do it. Oh, the government will do it. And it's not something that the government alone can do. If you've read our 10-year plan to end homelessness, you'll see that we have many, many different partners listed in our 10-year plan to end homelessness, and it's going to take each and every one of them to help us do this. One way we do it is the 10-year plan to end homelessness. We are finishing our third year for that. We set new priorities this fiscal year and are moving really well forward with those, and are just trying to make sure that we're bringing the right people to the table to help us move this forward.
And, Jeff, I mean, we have tried this for a long time, and I think that the Mayor's Office of Homelessness and others are really trying to make it work. And this commission for this 10-year plan to end homelessness is really trying to make it work. But I guess I get frustrated with some of it sometimes because, I mean, the answer in the ways is in front of us. I mean, there's that health care is a big piece of this. Health care is a huge piece in terms of the ability of all Americans to have a decent health care plan, which we still don't have. Affordable housing so that Audrey Curry's family doesn't have to triple and double up in a house and can afford a place to live. You know, I mean.
Sure. Well, we say that there are fundamentally three reasons that homelessness persists. You've mentioned two of them. And the other one is incomes, and it's, you know, inextricably tied to the other two. There's a lack of affordable housing, and we don't yet, and I don't know when we will, have the set of resources and the set of people put together to change that. There are small programs that are good ones. The city's now working on the vacant to value program and trying to do something about the vacant houses and the vacant lots. And that's essential. It's really important. But there aren't monetary resources to make that work on a scale that we need. They couldn't come from the city. The city doesn't have a lot of money, nor does the state. They have to come from the federal government. And yet, all signs are pointing to a shrinkage of federal support for programs for middle class and poor people. So that doesn't look like a particularly good future, and we have to fight really hard to prevent those resources from disappearing. And then there's the issue of incomes. You know, the minimum wage guarantees that you can't afford housing. Everywhere in the United States, and in Baltimore as well, if you work a full-time job at the minimum wage, you're at risk of being homeless. It doesn't make sense. And then the health care issue, what day will we have a rational health care system in which everyone's guaranteed it, the risks are shared among everybody, and people don't get rich by providing health care because it's a right, like public schools or fire stations.
But folks, what do you think? 410-319-8888. You can agree or disagree. We want to hear your ideas. Maybe some of you have been homeless before in your own lives and have stories of your own to tell. 410-319-8888. This is Homeless People's Memorial Day. And every year we do this program to honor the men and women in our community who have passed away, most of them alone, because of homelessness. And we have their names and we read them at the end of the hour. So they are not completely forgotten. So their names are heard and engraved at least on this radio station, on our website, and hopefully in the hearts and minds of all of us, so we can think of a way out of this. I mean, I was just thinking as Kate was talking, Audrey, I mean, when we say people used to take care of each other, but that's exactly what y'all were doing. Your family was taking care of each other when the fire happened.
Yes.
It was your extended family living together, making sure everybody could pull together and have a roof over their heads and take care of one another.
Yes, exactly. But stuff happened.
So what kind of work did you do before this happened?
I worked as a teacher's assistant for 20 years.
In the school system, city,
yes.
Schools, and what happened?
Baltimore,
what happened?
City. I got laid off and never went back.
You were laid off as a
teacher's assistant? Off as a teacher's assistant, yes, because I'm shorted.
See, this is important for people to hear. You and Bob, you know, Bob manages the lumber yard. You were a teacher's aide. People have jobs with benefits that were actually working in this community, making a living, paying taxes, and that's what we're talking about in America today. And the many, many more children now who are also homeless. Every time I talk to them, when I talk to Brendan and Willa Walsh, they see more and more children every day lining up to eat with their families. on the west side of town. These people aren't homeless. They're near homeless. They're sharing homes. There's not enough to eat, so they come to Viva House to eat every day. You going to say something, Bob? Then I'm going to go back. I'm going to open the phones right here.
Well, just to go back to that, you know, I had worked and contributed taxes and everything for 42 years, you know. And, you know, it's, I can only ever remember being out of work for 1 week in 1971. The rest of my life, I was, you know, I enjoyed working.
You were making a really decent salary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I, you know, it, over 70.
Over $70,000 a year. Mm-hmm. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to the phones. And Kevin and Whittlon, you're on the air.
Hey, hi,
Kevin.
Nice to see you and your guests.
Welcome.
Hey, yeah, I was homeless for almost 2 years, and I tell you what happened. I'm sharing my story real briefly.
Go ahead.
I was living in Hartford, Connecticut, and I ended up applying for. I can't even mention the agency because I'll tell you why I can't mention. But I ended up getting hired as a police officer, and. The guy that did my background investigation, he found out that, you know, I couldn't account for where I had been, you know, where I'd worked for almost 2 years or you know, having a stable home. But he took a chance on me, and some kind of way they ended up hiring me. I wish I could mention the guy's name, but I can't because he still works here. and he really shouldn't have done what he did, but he took a chance on me and gave me a chance. That's been over 20 years ago, and I tell you, even when I was in the police academy, I was living on the streets, living out of my car, and using the Union Station, using the train station to wash up and stuff like that, and just so happened that people from a local fire home, they let me live there in the fire station while I was, till I got my money and stuff together, and I haven't looked back since, man, but I tell you, need to understand, there's all different people in all different walks of life. Mentally stable people, believe it or not.
Right.
I mean, there's just people who took a tough right hand shot, man. You know, it got knocked down, man. And what really hurts me is these conservatives and politicians and stuff that think it's some type of a. I think it's a evil thing to help somebody. You know, sometimes you gotta reach a hand down, and even if it's the government. I mean, I just can't understand why people seem so mean to help another person, as if the people are just, you know, want to be in that condition. You know, they want these quote unquote handouts, but sometimes you gotta reach a hand down and pull a person. If this guy had not taken a chance and hired me, it's no telling.
Where you would have been.
Where I would be right now.
Well, Kevin, anybody have a thought for Kevin, hearing his story?
Well, I can mention something about, you know, lending a helping hand.
Bob Jankowiak.
Yes. You know, since I've gotten my own, I went into public housing. Through that, after a little while, my building, they nominated me president of tenant council. And I felt like it was my responsibility to help give back and to help to represent people that really can't talk for themselves. There's a lot of people out there that, need help and nobody's there to give it to them. Later on I became a delegate with the Resident Advisory Board, with HABC, Housing Authority, and just ways that you can contribute. It doesn't need to be, I'm on disability and I can go out there and help other people. You know, there's tons of opportunities.
And you had to fight, but you got your disability.
Oh, yeah. It took me 3 years to get my disability. You know, they initially denied it, but when it finally went in front of the law judge, I was actually given an extra year because I was unjustly denied.
Let's go back to the phones. Let you add to that, Audrey, at all. Okay, we'll go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Kevin, thanks so much. There's another Kevin on the air. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, Kevin. Welcome.
Yeah, pleasure to talk to you guys and to hear the stories. I just want to say that the reason why we can't get a grasp on homelessness situations to help better homeless people is that everybody's talking about we're being socialists. We're being socialists because we're accepting government programs. You know, socialism helps. And you can use the terminology however you want, but people helping people, what the lady said before you went to the callers, is what gets things done. And in America, we've become so separatist. Everybody has to have their own property separate from everybody else. They want to have 3,000, 4,000 square feet homes, but they don't care that in conserving things that you, the space. And when I grew up, coming up in Baltimore and living in East Baltimore, we would help. My grandmother would help family members, people that were homeless, have them come and stay, even people that we knew. That's not going to happen again because people are so separate from each other. Anytime we lose ourselves in the internet and we can't physically connect, you know, without a cell phone, you know, this is where we are. But I think that it comes in the fact that everybody's sitting down, understanding the circumstances, how the resources are. You know, we can get the resources. Private donors, you know, people can donate, and you look at every abandoned house and find a punch list and say, this is what it takes to fix this house. Fix it. The families that fix it, put them in it. Habitat for Humanity did it for more than 30 years, and it was successful. But when you got the idea that everybody should own a home and it was pushed out there, then you had more people on the hook financially. So that's where the crisis comes in.
Kevin, I'd like to get our panel to kind of respond a little bit to what you're thinking. Jeff, you're shaking your head.
There are several organizations that do that sort of work, helping people fix housing so it becomes habitable. And we've been meeting recently with the Mayor's Office of Employment Development. One of the goals of the 10-year plan to end homelessness is to create a sort of synergy between the fact that there are so many people who are unemployed and in many cases don't have employable skills, and there are so many vacant houses in Baltimore, somewhere between 15 and 50,000. I don't really know. We don't need to argue about it. There's plenty of them.
There's lots of them.
And it costs a lot to fix up some of them. But on the other hand, if we put together these programs that help people gain skills, fix houses, create new homes, it will make a really important contribution to ending homelessness. That's a really good point.
And it's good to have donors, and I think that's a big part. I've seen a lot of that in terms of the 10-year plan and philanthropy. But I don't think we can, for want of a better term, philanthropize our way out of this problem. This is it's more than that. And that's part of our problem is we're always kind of looking at nonprofit philanthropies to put money into this, which is great, and they should.
Yeah, don't discourage them.
I'm not discouraging it. I'm just thinking about its limitations.
Absolutely, and that's actually part of the importance of what Jeff was mentioning is that the skills that folks will learn in learning construction trade jobs are generally tend to be, especially union scale jobs, are higher than the minimum wage, which allows people to have a housing wage. The National Low Income Housing Task Force has a wonderful website, and they do a thing called Priced Out every year, and they have a grid which will show you how long somebody has to work at minimum wage in order to be able to not be housing burdened, which is spending 30% or less of your income or more of your income would be a housing burden, and then also how much you would need to make in order to be spending only 30% of your income at a fair market rent. And it's 14 something in Baltimore City now.
It's actually a little higher this year.
Thank you.
Well, but that's a good point. Healthcare for the homeless pays a living wage or a housing wage. We pay people enough so that they're not homeless. And we challenge nonprofits throughout this area to do the same. It's hard to do. But your budget is your values. It's getting close to $17 an hour.
That is $17 an hour as a living wage to survive in this community.
Yeah.
So put that in your hat and think about that for a few minutes. $17 an hour as a living wage to survive in this community. So we're going to take a very brief break. And when we come back, Tim, you're the next caller up, then Warren, then Clarence. We're going to get to all your calls. This is Homeless People's Memorial Day. At the end of this hour, we're going to read the names of the people who died in Baltimore because of homelessness. So stay with us. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. For a 360-degree view of the people and stories behind the issues, tune in to The Mark Steiner Show, Monday through Thursday, 5 to 7 p.m. That's right here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, MeQ, and the University of Maryland Medical Center. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, reminding you support for WEAA is provided by Mid-Atlantic Neurosurgical Associates, MANA, a center dedicated to those who suffer from brain, spine, and pain disorders. With three Baltimore locations, MANA's team of pain management physicians and surgeons provide a wide range of sensitive and compassionate treatment options to improve the health and well-being of its patients. For more information online, manapaincenter.com or 410-601-8314. We are here with, to talk about homelessness today as we are in this Christmas season. We're in this holy season when it's solstice day, the shortest day of the year, a very spiritual day for many people as well, leading up to our new year, a cold time of the year. Many people are on the streets, many thousands of Baltimoreans on the streets and who are homeless. And this is Homeless People Persons Memorial Day that remembers the people who died because of homelessness in 2010. And it's not over yet, and hopefully no more will die, but we are going to read their names at the end of the hour to memorialize their names and keep this memorial alive in the hearts and minds of everybody. Jeff Singer is President and CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless. Kate Burdell is Director of Homeless Services Program for the Mayor's Office on Human Services. Bob Chankoyak lost his home and job after a battle with health issues, and after a period of living in the streets, he found help through Healthcare for the Homeless and become an advocate and an activist and all that. He was a man who had a job that paid over $70,000 a year, lost everything because of his illness, healthcare bills, lost his home, lost his truck, and was on the streets. And now is building his life back and being an advocate for his fellow citizens who are homeless. Audrey Curry was a teacher's assistant for many years before being laid off. Lived in a home with her extended family. The home burned down, ending her being homeless. And she is now at the Gilbert Avenue Shelter, which is Healthcare for the Homeless, where she is in the writers group and trying to rebuild her life as well. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. I said we go right to the phones, and we will. And Tim, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon, Tim.
Good afternoon.
I want to thank y'all. I love talking. This is a conversation that's passionate to my heart. I'm originally from Washington, D.C., and when I got my bachelor's degree, my first job actually was with CCMV, which was the Mitch Snyder Shelter.
Oh, yeah.
But which actually showed me true homelessness in the beginning, face to face. And when I moved up here to the Baltimore area and actually got a test of meeting people who were homeless on the street, and when y'all brought this conversation up, I really had to come out and just wanted to just clarify some of the things for the listeners. That, yes, you know, homelessness comes from many different issues. And the biggest issue that most people don't recognize is that poverty is only a second away. I mean, it, you know, from a paycheck or from a hospitalization to just a devastation of somebody in your family dying.
Mm-hmm.
That anything can put us out on the street. So it's not just drugs. It's not just mental illness. And if people think that, or if the listeners out there thinking, this can never happen to me, you know, it can happen to anybody. I was homeless at the age of 19 by my own stupidity, almost died on the streets of D.C. from out here in the cold weather, and it was from my stupidity, but it can be from anything. I mean, when I say anything, just almost anything, and we cannot pass up looking at anybody out here at, when we see them on the street saying they did it to themselves. But then the other point that I really, really want to get y'all to start really talking about is that every year, you know, we do a march on Washington to against homelessness. And one of the conversations that all the politicians are having right now is about making the rich richer, or helping those who are $250,000 income, or what they call a middle class. Well, there, you know, in my eyes, there's no such thing as a middle class, because either you got it or you're just almost there on being homeless. And homelessness is a process that can happen at any point in time. We need to stop looking at homelessness as you know, just a bad issue. And, you know, maybe if we start looking at it as a health, that's why I love health care for the homeless, because it's a health care issue. If we do not, if we change homelessness into the same category as people that are coming up with AIDS or people that are coming up with cancer or something like that, maybe then we can get the funding out of the Congress and everybody else that needs to help us stop this disease, this problem, this situation.
Tim,
if we don't put money into it, it won't stop.
Tim, I appreciate you being part of the show and having your thoughts heard on the air. And I think that, you know, it is true. One thing that you said in the very beginning is true here, that it's that all of us, most of us, and I count myself in that world, are a few checks, a few months away from homelessness. If you lost your job, you know, Val and I look at that all the time. We say we have X amount of money, or, you know, that's saved in the bank. That could last us how many months or something should happen. And that's reality for most people. This is where we are in the society now. So it's just not a question of whether you have a college degree or don't have a college degree, or whether you are making $50,000 a year or $35,000 or $100,000 a year, that people are all in that place on the edge in this country right now together. And I think we forget that. You get this false sense of security about who we are and where we are.
Yeah. Income disparities, as Tim mentioned, are growing. They've been growing for the last 30 years, and now they're higher than they've ever been since they were measured. And that's fundamentally why people who are so-called middle class can easily lose their homes, like Bob did. We've distributed wealth in such a way that the upper 1% of the population owns as much wealth as the lower 75% these days. And until we address those sorts of issues, you know, we can't solve homelessness.
Absolutely. And that's part of our 10-year plan as well, is to advocate for increased public benefits. Currently, one of the most basic public benefits, I cannot for the life of me remember the acronym, is $185 a month.
Temporary Disability Assistance Program.
Thank you very much. TDAP. And you can't live on
$185 a month.
Correct. And SSDI is $664, correct?
Close.
Correct me.
The $185 that she's talking about, I had to live on for almost 2 years.
A month. How do you live on $185 a month?
You stay in shelters. You try to take and get food so you can, you know, first you got to hit like our deli bread or something like that for at least one meal a day. Maybe get a sandwich if you can afford it, and try to find as many free things to do as possible, because, you know, that's $6 a day. You can't go to the market and get a sandwich for
$6 a day.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Audrey Curry. Well, if you had the ear of the people in power, what would you tell them? What would you say to them?
That we need more money put into the system to help people like me, and help people like Bob, and help people that's in the shelters. Because I was one of your callers. I never thought this would happen to me. But I'm currently living off $185 a month, and it's not easy.
Even with the residents in the shelter?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So like Bob was saying, we eat at daily bread or soup kitchens, and it's a place called My Sister's Place. They help wash our clothes you know, offer some services for us, but it's hard out here.
410-319-8888. This is Homeless Persons Memorial Day, and we remember all those who died in our community because of homelessness. And we're just talking about those who died in Baltimore City, and we're going to read their names just shortly, so we can remember them all on this day as we approach these holidays. 410-319-8888. Warren, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening, Warren.
Good evening. First, I just wanted to say, I wanted to, you know, say hello to Mr. Singer. Singer had happened to help me with a few situations that I had going on, not so much with homelessness, but with some other things. My mother's one of the leading people in the state of Maryland, probably the United States, in health disparities. I won't really put her out there, but I think Jeff probably knows exactly who I am. But one
good to hear from you, Warren.
It's a pleasure to hear from you as well, Jeff. One of the things that I just find that is just a huge problem, and it's just my opinion, by having family that is in political and deals with health care, a lot of it falls down with the homeless situation, is that, to me, there's more money in the treatment than ever the cure. And it seems like a lot of times people aren't doing what's necessary to make the environments more inducive for people to live. When you come down to, like healthcare for the homeless is a great situation, but just to give you on another institution, Baltimore Behavioral Health was doing things to help people with their mental illnesses and recovery and in housing. But the problem was, sure, you could teach me greatly about how to get a mental illness together and how to basically put my life together, but then you put people in these nasty holes. That they're calling places to live, which it corrodes what people have just developed in trying to learn how to live. So one of the key things I think is giving people the an opportunity to live in a place that is stable and clean. A lot of times those environments change how people even think about their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times you put people where, granted, no one wants to be in the cold, and a lot of times you just have to take what you can get. But I think if money is spent on not making these places the Taj Mahal, but making them more conducive to living standards, I think that you will have a better result in people trying to get up and do something more positive to get their life together. If you're already faced with homelessness, joblessness, and then you're living in an environment where there are rats, roaches, or just unhealthy healthcare situations that are going on, it almost kills the spirit completely, and I'm speaking from personal experience.
You're talking about homes that people are put in if they are homeless, and those conditions are abysmal is what you're saying.
Well, like I say, a lot of the places that I have seen, not that I've lived in, but I've seen personally myself, and I have been homeless. This is the reason why I can speak so freely about this. A lot of them aren't conducive in even giving a person the state of mind to want to even get up and do something better for themselves. It almost becomes, well, now you're homeless, you have no job, and you're living in these places. This is why a lot of people end up turning to drugs and alcohol and different things that keep them into that cycle where they never be able to come out of it.
So I guess let me let...
So these are, I believe what Warren's referring to are the recovery houses. That is really a gray area in... housing law, I guess. They're not funded by most government agencies. They're not licensed by the state. They are just people who want to put up a shingle and say, I'm going to have a recovery house. And so unless someone is aware that recovery house exists, if they try to get, you know, dollars from the government, they, you know, aren't beholden to anyone but themselves.
Hmm. How can that go on?
It's an unregulated industry.
Jeff?
Jeff.
Yes, Jeff.
beginning about 30 years ago, the public sector began to stop supporting all sorts of services and housing in the addiction world, for example. 1989 saw the state of Maryland stop funding for long-term residential care. 1989.
1989.
We had a mayor whose name I won't mention who said that addiction was a public health problem, and then he cut 100% of the city's funds for addiction treatment. So Warren's right that the public sector isn't supporting the kinds of services at the quantity and quality that we need that could make a difference. But what's the key to a lot of this is the housing crisis. The housing crisis that we've seen since in 1980, the federal budget for housing, for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, was $32 billion in 1980 dollars. This year, in 2010, the federal budget for the Department of Housing and Urban Development is $34 billion in 2010 dollars. It would have to be about $80 billion to be equivalent to what it was in 1980. That budget has been slashed and slashed and slashed by every president, whether they were Democrat or Republican. And therefore, homelessness, you can trace the rise of contemporary homelessness with the cuts to public housing and the Section 8 program. It's a direct, an inverse correlation, as the statisticians say. And until we change that, we're not going to fundamentally be able to resolve homelessness.
Absolutely. And when under Cuomo, I believe, at HUD, they did away with the one-for-one replacement, where they were required at one point, if they did away with one unit of affordable housing, they had to replace it with another unit of affordable housing. And unfortunately, under President Clinton, that went away. And so now they're allowed to tear down affordable housing and not replace it with affordable housing. And so our housing stock for folks who are working or making $185 a month goes away.
Because this is all seen as, at least it was popularized, as welfare mentality, as taking care of people who won't take care of themselves. And that's what the public image was, being cutting these budgets because they're not necessary, make people go back to work, so to speak. I mean, they would say, and that will resolve the problem. But it hasn't resolved the problem.
No, it's strange. In countries where they don't have the level of homelessness that we do, they have vibrant public housing sectors, the European countries, for example. And it's not thought that everyone needs to privately own their home.
Right.
And there's no shame in living in a home that you don't own. We have a ways to go.
Well, it depends what our priorities, what we want our priorities to be in America and how we want to do it. I think that's part of the issue that we're facing. We're always kind of driven by this corporate media that is that beats us down every time we try to raise these issues. As
well, you know, my children would be very disappointed if I didn't say at this point that the military budget has grown to more than $700 billion, which is the size of all the other countries' military budgets put together, and in fact more.
410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones and get our other guests back in here as well, who's been on a long time. We'll go to Clarence. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, Clarence.
I don't want to get off the track on this subject, but I think it's something that's directly related. When you speak of all the houses in Baltimore that need to be renovated, it's always a factor of how much does it cost to renovate these units. And I myself cannot figure out why that salary workers that work for the cities with the proper skill set cannot go into these houses and drastically reduce the cost of renovating them because they're on salary, e.g. cutting out contractors who have to make a big profit and directly use these renovated houses for homeless people and certain programs. There is not – I've seen the worst houses in Baltimore City be renovated in less than a week's time by contractors. So I don't see any reason why the city cannot do the math and use salaried skilled workers to reduce the cost in renovating these houses. And because we have the inspectors, we have people with the skill set, and they're already on salary. When you look at that and then look at the homelessness problem, I think there's a direct way that that problem could not be completely solved.
Right.
A drastic cut in it. So I hope I didn't get off the track.
No, you did that. No, I think you're very much on the track. I think you're very much on the track of what has to be done and how we have to do it. And I think that we only have I want to start reading these names here in a minute. We won't have much time left. And I think part of the issue also is jobs in America. I was with a man the other night who says we don't even have an understanding of what it would take to rebuild the infrastructure of our country and what it would cost. But if we did and started investing in it as a nation, we would put America back to work. The way to end homelessness is to put people back to work. That's how you end homelessness. That's how you end crime. That's how you end dysfunctional families, or if dysfunctional families end up in poverty. I mean, that's what we have to do. People have to go back to work. People have to be put back to work, and we won't do it. We could do it. You know, we need Audrey in the classroom. I want to thank you all for being here. Audrey Curry, thank you so much for what you do.
You.
I look forward to reading what you write.
Thank you.
Bob Jankowiak, good to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Being here.
And to have your story here. Welcome to the job, Kate Burdell. Thank you so much for the work you do for the homeless. Of course, my dear friend Jeff Singer, everything you do in healthcare for the homeless. We're going to spend some time now just to stop and listen for a moment. Homeless Persons Memorial Day, 2010. These are the people who died in Baltimore City because they were homeless. Tracy Baird, Ronald Bessard, Albert Bethia, David Beers, Thomas Boston, Brian Boyle, George Boynes, Johnny Bradley, Raymond Brown, Michael D. Burrell, Theo Corwin, Venita Crawford, Jennifer Crosby, Ricky Diggs, Donald C. Downs, Alan Ford, Darrell Ford, William Gansermiller, Brian Gachinski, Rhonda Hamilton, Doug Hamm, James D. Hansen, Bruce Harmesson, Michael Harrison, Robert Hicks, Warren Hill, Annetta Hinson, Cinderella Holly, Yolanda Howard, Howard Hubbard, Andre Hurston, Sidney Hinson, Eric Jackson, Kenneth Jackson, Lafayette Johnson, Dennis Nauer, Bruce Laster, Alan Leslie, Joseph J. Lewandowski, Harley McGee, Lee E. McCoy, Jerome McDonald, Gerald McDonald, Stephen McCarran, Regina McGuire Harvey, Clarence L. McKnight, Lee McKnight, Linda McNeil, Jerry McNutt, Mark Miles, Donnie Moore, Douglas Morris, Pamela Myers, James Nicholson L., Adam O'Connor, Ernest Pangestidis, Ryland Perry, Anton T. Pridgett, Lindsay S. Queensbury, Adeline Quillen, Leonard Rainey, Elva Randall, Elijah Randolph, Patricia Patty Phillips Rayford, Joel A. Reeves, Dwight Richardson, Joseph Rhodes, Cecil Rowland, Mira Sandhu, Frank Savage, Christian Sinat, James Jimmy Smith, Larry Smith, Angelo Speller, William Billy Soper, James Stratemeyer, Linwood Tate, Joseph Taylor, Winslow Thomas, Angela Tomlin, Anthony Waller, Mark Walters, Charles Wennert, George Williams, Keona Williams, Martin York. All died homeless because of homelessness in our community. May their souls rest in peace. May we not forget them. May we work together to end homelessness and build a society we can all live in justly and sanely. And I want to thank our guests for being here. We'll take a break. Remember these names. They'll be posted on our website so they will not be forgotten. Thank you.